Hey, welcome to Stock Talk. We're very pleased today to have our good friend Sean Brook from Seed World Group present. Obviously, we're talking about a lot of different stuff, and we're going to keep on talking about a lot of stuff, but a lot more of it will interest seed companies. So, Sean, thanks for being here. Cue the intro.
And then we're back. So I feel like we have a celebrity on with us today.
Todd.
Yeah, I feel pretty famous.
Yeah, absolutely. Sean, actually, I'm really, really glad to be with you too.
Yeah, Sean, we're glad you're here and we can make the time to be able to do this stuff. You know, got to ask something, dude. You know, I've known you for a lot of years now. As a matter of fact, I'll never forget that 2016 IPSA conference where we were sitting in the bar and debating platitudes of Donald Trump as a potential president of the United States. Your hair was much different then. You got a much cooler hair look these days.
Oh, wow.
And as a man who also had hair then, but has none now, I'm interested to what your hair regimen is to see if I can get any back. Can you share that with us?
The hair regimen. I think that what I would tell you is I had long hair for most of my life. Little mullet action underneath a hockey helmet.
A mullet? I mean, really a mullet? Do those pictures exist? We should share those with 100%. You know, with our viewers and the Seed World people.
I'm sure they do because it looked really good underneath a hockey helmet and a baseball cap. And other than that, it looked like a disaster. And then from that, it became just a straight short haircut to never have to mess with. And then, I don't know, as I got older, it felt like if I've got it up there, why don't I let it grow?
Oh, yeah. I'm with you. You should. You know, it's interesting. I've got a buddy that was bald, and then he told me that here's the secret to defeating baldness. You take a Propecia pill every day. You spray your head every single day, sometimes twice, with minoxidil, and you quit drinking because alcohol inhibits hair growth.
So that's where you ended that conversation.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not interested. I mean, there are certain things that, you know, are just not worth it. I mean, you know, women wear wigs. Marty and I were debating all these women that wear wigs all the time now. And I mean, like, if I really want it, I can go get me a toupee. My dad wore one for years. He looked great in it.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with a little lumberjack in Arkansas.
True. Actually, collagen is really good for hair growth. Just FYI.
Yeah, but the alcohol thing, if that's true, I'm doomed.
Oh, I don't know about that.
So as a side note to your alcohol point, yesterday, 90 days dry for this guy.
Oh, wow.
I know. So you might boot me off the show. I don't know. That might be my exit music. But yeah, 90 days. I decided I did 30 days. And just because I do 30 days every year, me and a buddy do 30 days. And this time I just felt so much better after 30 days. I haven't stopped it. So,
you know, the problem with that is, you know, I support your business. I support, you know, the seed industry and Seed World and Issues Inc. And you're here because I support you. And I own 5 bars and you just ditch my entire business model. I mean, what the hell? What
the hell? The best part is, like, I've been at many events, and there is so many NA beers, so much non-alcoholic beer.
Oh, there he is, without
non-alcoholic spirits, cocktails. I've been out for dinner many, 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 many times over the last 90 days, and wow, do they have some great stuff for that.
So is this a new thing? You're alcohol-free forever?
To be announced, but I'm feeling pretty good. I'm not going to lie.
Although I sang
real loud in the truck coming into work today to I Got Friends in Low Places, and it made me remember all those fun times I had when I was drinking.
Yeah, you know, it's tough. I did have a guy tell me years ago that if I'd quit drinking, I'd never have, you know, busted blood vessels under my nose. And I've started noticing I'm, you know, there's a few things that are popping up.
But the rosy cheeks work for Santa Claus.
Yeah, they work for Santa Claus.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that's something we have in common. I don't know if you knew that, Kat. I do that as well.
Todd, do and I you? Do. Yeah, I'm surrounded by Santas right now.
You cannot match the St. Nicholas of Myra. That's me.
Right. Yeah. No, I was not suggesting that I was as good as Todd. I was just suggesting that I go down the same path as Todd.
I am supposed to be headed to Santa school here in a few weeks, like a month. It's a month. It's a month off. Going back to Santa school again in Midland,
Why
Michigan.
Again?
Why again? Yeah. Why not? Meet all my fellow Santa brethren, have a good time, sing all the Christmas songs, go to Frankenmuth, Michigan, which is like, you know, Christmas town in a bottle, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You know, I can get down with Christmas town. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Take Marty, make her go to the Mrs. Claus classes.
Oh, yeah. She's never done that, though, has she?
Well, she's kind of cool, Mrs. Claus. She doesn't wear like the white old lady's wig because I refuse to have a white old lady's wig, you know, woman as Mrs. Claus. I believe that Santa, you know, sets his sights higher and has cooler Mrs. Claus.
Okay.
I did find a dress that I really want to have made for Marty as, you know, Mrs. Claus. It's like this red and white peppermint and super cool. And instead of having the white hair, this woman has kind of that cool silver dark hair, and her name is Mrs. Carol Claus. She's a woman in North Carolina that plays Mrs. Claus, but it's Mrs. Carol Claus. So yeah, she's kind of cool.
We've gone so far down this Santa Claus.
I know. Let's bring it back. There's been a lot of banter. Okay. What we're really here to talk about today is obviously the seed industry. And I mean, honestly, Sean, glad that you could join us. There's a lot going on. In the seed industry, you know, right now, we've got a couple of different things happening. The election's coming up, of course. I know while you can't vote, you certainly have lots of commentary about that. We've heard some different positions from both presidential candidates on, you know, directions that they're talking about going. But let's, you know, I really wanted to dive in a bit to the seed industry itself and just in a very broad sense, you know, what you're hearing in your unique space, what you think is going on out there and is kind of driving, you know, our seed companies in general and, you know, maybe even some of the big trends, because I know one of the things that you do is you're always in place with the big seed meetings globally as well. So, you know, while we look at the independent seed companies really specifically, what is it that you're seeing and hearing out there in the marketplace and even in the global marketplace?
Yeah, great question. I think I would start with the fact that what I see is independent seed companies broken into two categories right now. One category, which is I have no idea which way to turn and I'm trying to get out of this as fast as I can. And the other category is I am going for it. I see opportunity. I see growth. I'm creative and I want to push forward and I want to grow. And they very much see a path to making money and longevity and success. And those two bundles, it has really created a diverse approach now. So there's some that are in expansion mode and they're buying up everything under the sun to expand their footprint and be able to utilize their systems and plans and growth and vision to continue to grow. And then there's that other part that's in a little tough right now. I don't know how else to say it. They're in a little tough right now because they don't necessarily have the path or the, it's either path, vision, or enthusiasm. They're missing either one or all of those pieces, and that makes it tough. So I think that's the first big piece that I see. I mean, you two know independence exponentially better than I'll ever know them, but that's what I'm hearing as I'm having some of these conversations out in the marketplace.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, clearly there are those that we can immediately identify that are growing their business. And I mean, you can look out there and, you know, you can see that each year Beck seems to grow stronger and expand more. And they do it differently than everybody else out there, obviously. They go in, they acquire land, they, you know, make sure that they have a good footprint to work out from a facility standpoint. And then they start really going after, you know, farmers in an area with their unique marketing approach. But then, you know, if we look at acquisition based, I mean, I'm not concerned about calling that. You know, we've seen Rob Seco be very active in the acquisition area, acquiring several different companies. You know, Federal Hybrids and Big Cobb, you know, to name a couple, and have been, you know, trying to expand their footprint very broadly. GDM has been making a lot of moves as of late, without any doubt, and certainly have got a unique space coming in from their genetic and trait situation from South America and Argentina specifically. So there are those that are out there that are doing that. Then there, you know, I know in our space, there are some other companies that are making strategic acquisitions that fit their footprint very well from some smaller companies. But, you know, and this is all happening in an area where, let's face it, the news coming out of the big guys, not super impressive. I mean, we've got Bayer. Everybody's been watching the round of lawsuits, been out there. You know, there have been times over the past several months that Bayer has said they don't have free cash to operate. They're, you know, cutting expenses and moving things around. So you hear all that. And that seems to be really roundup litigation driven on Bayer. But I just noticed this morning's news came out that Syngenta's cutting 10% of their Basel workforce in Switzerland. Because of the tremendous downturn in their chemicals business. And got to tell you, I was surprised by that announcement. Not that, you know, Syngenta's struggling. I think all the big companies seem to be at this point. It's, you know, they kind of lead the struggle. But and maybe you can help me a little bit on some of this international space. Syngenta in particular, having been there for the years that I was, you know, they protected that Swiss workforce like nobody's business. And to eliminate 10% of the workforce in Basel, I got to tell you, surprising move for me. That's just something that until now I would have said doesn't happen because of, you know, government regulations and protecting the Swiss citizenry and all that other stuff. Any thoughts on that? Not just Syngenta in particular, but big guys and where they are versus some of the others.
Yeah, I think the big guys, well, we see they're being cautious, right? I think everyone is a little bit cautious or a little bit concerned about what the economy is going to do and what money is going to do. So with those pieces in mind, they're being ultra cautious. When you have a bigger pile of chips on the table, I think you either have to be more cautious or you run the risk of losing a big pile of chips. So their pile of chips is bigger, and therefore they're going to potentially be a little bit more cautious and a little more risk averse. And I think that's what we're seeing now, is that they're being a lot more risk averse and they're trying to batten down the hatches a little bit just in case. And perhaps some of these big companies see some fat as well on the organization. I don't think anyone would look at the big four and say, wow, they're a super lean set of organizations there that couldn't afford to lose 10% of that. So I don't see that as a big warning signal. I don't think that's a big, whoa, this is a disaster scenario. I agree that I would be surprised. I am surprised a little bit by the volume that we're talking about. But I think it's that trimming of the fat that, quite frankly, is probably good for organizations.
No, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that at all.
So I would throw out, though, that like, so I'm in a couple of weeks off to Euroseeds meeting in Copenhagen this year. And that's the who's who of the Europe, well, and even the international marketplace, and but especially the European marketplace, and they're having their biggest event ever. The attendance is massive. The results for people attending their booths, all of those pieces are absolutely massive, and I think that the Euroseeds meeting has really positioned itself as like the go-to meeting for that audience. They have really set themselves up to come together to have these conversations. And the thing I notice about Europe that's different from North America is they have so many unique partnerships. They partner with their enemies more than anywhere else that I've seen in the world, where they can set aside some distaste or competitiveness to be able to really come together and work. Now, I mean, in our industry, we're used to that. We have our supplier is our biggest competitor in the marketplace. So this industry is, that's not a foreign concept to for this industry by any stretch.
No, but I will say that, you don't see really successful competitors coming together and, staying together for a long period of time. And I guess I'm jaded. You know, I think about Greenleaf was originally formed in 2006 by Syngenta and then invited then Pioneer to be a part of it. And that lasted as a joint venture until 2011 and became a totally owned subsidiary of Syngenta again. Of course, I was telling Catherine the other day, just trying to make a bet and hoping that I could win with her that, how long do you think the average life of a JV is? I don't know. It's about 7 years, honestly. So, JVs that go longer than 7 years really make it past a substantial point because most of them don't last very long because of the very nature of the competitors being together and then, starting to go different directions or somebody's not happy with the way things are. So, to that point, you're right. I mean, you've got all these suppliers or the suppliers of traits and genetics to independents are also competitors in the marketplace. But son of a gun, I don't see a lot of the big competitors really working together to, try to do something else like you're suggesting happens in Europe.
Yeah. And I think that we talk about them as tier two seed companies, right? And most of those are often the biggest ones are European. And I think those entities are really getting some wind in their sails.
So Sean, talk to me a little bit about what's happening up in Canada these days, because, IPSA's got a lot of interest in working with Canadian seed companies and seeing how we can tailor our value proposition to work better with companies in Canada so we can bring some things forward there. What's happening up there? We've had some outreach from some companies that have contacted us directly because of your presence and you're talking to them.
Yeah, I think there is so many more similarities than there are differences between the seed companies in Canada and in the U.S. It's a similar approach, right? It's an independent, fiercely independent approach of attitude and a drive for success. I think the difference is obviously the industry itself is different. How we sell seed, I think, is different. Right, we have to sell by variety here, which is a distinct difference. So there isn't nearly as much competition. I think that we were lucky enough to have Andy Levine was a keynote speaker at the Seeds Canada meeting in July up in Edmonton, and so he got to share some of his thoughts and vision of the U.S. seed industry. And I think it was really well received in Canada by the Canadian seed companies that were at the event. And I think part of the reason that there's interest in your organization from Canadian seed companies is because they want that camaraderie that I describe to them when I see what happens with these guys that will go fight tooth and nail out in a marketplace and then come together in, where are we going this year, Palm Springs, and then come mm-hmm. together in Palm Springs and share best practices and talk about how do they make the business and the industry stronger. And they want that. They really, really want that. So I think that an opportunity to be able to learn, that's what I've gotten in my global efforts traveling around the world to hear how Europeans do it compared to how Brazilians do it compared to how the Chinese do it right across the board. It allows you to, you never want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and keep what's the great ideas along the way to help the industry get stronger.
No, I certainly agree with that. And I believe that's a big strength of IPSA is that, all the independents, whether they, trade paint in the field during the year or not, they come together with a lot of respect for one another and do look at best practices with the concept that we're not really targeting and competing against any of these companies. We're trying to target and compete against the bigger guys that are out there. So that's a really strong statement. You know, one of the things that we've started talking to a lot of the companies about is really focusing a lot more on, and we've been talking about this for years, this is not a new thing, but focusing a lot more on their marketing intents and focusing on the customer buying experience. Because in the competition arena, and I've said this several times over the last few months, and I have a hard time actually making this illustration, but it really is, I think, succinct. I look at the independent seed companies right now where they are, and then I look at two different segments of companies and where they were and where they are today. And, you know, there's been a lot said about the potential demise of independent seed companies, and I think that's tremendously overstated. And here's why. Prior to the huge explosion of Lowe's, Home Depot, and Menards, you know, big box hardware stores in the United States, local hardware store was it. And that's where people went. And, you know, you look around today and think about that local hardware store, and they are still around. There are fewer. But the buying experience of that local hardware store is tremendous compared to the big box stores. A lot of luster's gone after off the big boxes. I mean, the buying experience there is you're going to find it, maybe, but you're not going to get any help finding it. If you do, that's a one individual outstanding in, you know, a whole group of big box stores. But I mean, the customer service, the buying experience, totally different. You walk into a local hardware store, say, "Hey, I need this." Somebody's going to walk you over exactly where it is, help you find it. What else do you need? You know, you're going to be taken care of.
Well, the piece that's missing, though, I think in that analogy of the independent hardware store and the big box store is one small little entity called Amazon.
Yes and no. I mean, at the same time, from a hardware store perspective, I don't think you're going on Amazon finding that little bitty thing that you need unless you don't have a local hardware store. The other analogy, honestly, is pharmacies, local pharmacies, which again were, you know, the rage until the rise of Walgreens.
Which now Amazon has an RX arm.
Oh, do they really? Well, yeah. Good luck on that.
And really what I meant by Amazon was like someone that disrupts the way we normally do it.
Well, that's true.
So if we don't think that's coming in the seed industry, right? It's because it's already starting of how people are going to buy these things that in my head, I'm never going to order a hammer online. Yeah. Right? I'm going to go to the store and buy a hammer. I will guarantee you that Amazon sells a ton of hammers. So how we're going to buy things in the future is different than how we're buying them now. And seed is not exempt from that.
It's not, but there are still local hardware stores. There's still local pharmacies that are out there because of the buying experience, and a segment of the population wants that buying experience. That's the illustration. That's the analogy. There's a segment that's going to Walmart for everything, segment that's going to Home Depot, segment that's going to Lowe's. Who cares? There's a segment that is going to buy DeKalb, that's going to buy Pioneer, that's going to buy whatever, and that's what they're going to buy. That's not my customer target. I want the people that are looking for something more personal, somebody that when something goes wrong, I'm going to pick up the phone and I'm going to call Brad Taylor and Brad's going to handle it. And I know that I'm going to pick up the phone and I'm going to call somebody that I know that I'm called last year, that I called the year before, and I'm going to call next year. And I'm not going to have a round robin of changing of the guard, you know, great illustration. And of course, Mike Peterson is a little bit different segment as a supplier to the marketplace, but was at a meeting recently with Mike. Mike put up a graphic of a bunch of people in his organization, and it was 5 years old. And this was like 15 or 20 people. And in that 5 years today, there's like one person that's different. It's a consistency of people and process and buying experience with Mike Peterson to all the seed companies and likewise to a lot of the seed companies. Whereas I would challenge any of the other larger institutions to put up a picture of a group 5 years ago and say, "Okay, where are we today?" I think Greenleaf might have come close to it, And of course, they just announced, the retirement of three stalwarts that I think had 130 years of experience between them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, things do change, but I am driving that buying experience for the customer segment. That's where I believe our independents have to focus, find what their customers are looking for and go after that. And, I can promise you that customer segment's not buying what they think. They're buying the seed that fits them, not what they think is the 100% best producing seed in the marketplace nationally. And they're not buying the lowest price.
Agreed.
So, we can't, as, independent seed companies, focus on the idea that I have to have the lowest price in the marketplace, or I absolutely have to have the very tip-top seed. There are too many, there are customers out there that are looking for something that fits them, and that's not always the case. So that's where I think the marketing focuses.
Todd, I agree. I think that I spend a shocking amount of my time talking about customer value journeys, right? Like, who isn't talking about a CVJ right now? And we do a lot of work around CVJ mapping, and it becomes such an eye-opening experience for all companies, but especially independent seed companies, because we have this expectation that people are going to move through a buy cycle just because we think we want them to. And they don't. So what activities, what things do we do that help them to move through that buy cycle? And I think that buy cycle is much clearer for a company that can control all the pieces, like an independent seed company can control all the pieces. Whereas if you're handing it off to a minimum wage person to be able to manage that experience, you just don't have as much control in it at all. And the second piece that I would suggest would be, how do we talk about our mission and vision, right? Everybody seems to be really poking at me right now to try and figure out what their mission and vision is. And my challenge back to every single one of them is, what if instead of trying to think of some, pardon my French, BS words that you're going to throw on a poster to put up on the wall, what if you define your origin story?
Totally agree with that.
What if you wrote out and made very clear the origin story that it is for you, so that the rest of your team understands that origin story? Because I'll bet in the exercise of defining that origin story, you get to that perfect nugget of why y'all do what you do. Mm-hmm. I've been on with you guys for 20 minutes and I used y'all, Kat. What's going on?
We're rubbing off on you, Sean.
You're just wanting to be part of the South. You always have. Yeah. Sean. You want to be a Southern Canadian. You really
absolutely
do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I actually love what you just said about finding your origin story, because I think it's, broad scale, let's find our value proposition as an independent, right? And I think that really does kind of whittle down to, why did we start? Why are we doing what we do, four generations back? And let's market on that, because really marketing is just storytelling. And so, like, let's just tell our story and let's talk about the value that we see in ourselves. And then that's going to translate to the perfect audience, in my opinion.
Agreed. And you show me someone that doesn't talk passionately about their origin story, and I'm going to show you a dead zone, because nobody talks anything other than, the reason we got into this was boop, 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 boop.
And it wasn't, the number one reason wasn't because we're going to make a freaking fortune.
Right. Get rich quick. This was not a
get rich quick. That's not why we got in it. And look, Sean, I agree with you too. And I mean, I think that's an area that we've been trying to push as well. I've never been a lot on, mission and vision statements. I think they're wordsmith phrases that just kind of and they don't mean anything. And a lot of times I think they're, byproducts of very large companies needing something to kind of set employees on a path. For me, an origin story is really about it. If you're staying true to the reasons you got in the business and people understand the reasons that you got into it, then there is that passion, and that's your real mission in life, is about, where did you start? And where are you headed? That's at the end of the story for me. So, especially these companies, and there's so many of them that, as Catherine said, have four and five generations to talk about. I mean, they got great great origin stories in rich histories.
Yep.
And, you know, as we like to point out, many of them at the very beginning were the classic innovator. They were coming into the marketplace to bring an innovation to market called corn hybrids. And, you know, that didn't exist before. So they were the innovators. It wasn't some massive company out there with, you know, international exposure in 300 countries. It was somebody that started up a little company in Illinois or Iowa or Indiana and said, hey, we're going to sell these seeds to these farmers because they're going to make better yields. Right. This is a real difference maker. And it's going to change their life in a time in the United States when we were in the midst of a depression. They had real missions that affected real people. So, I mean, rich histories and very cool stories that have come about from a whole lot of our companies out there.
Agreed.
So Sean, where do you
think about this technology piece? It just dawned on me as I heard you say that, Todd, that I think part of the weakness within some of our storytelling is this idea that we've been able to hang our hat on a technology advantage for a long time. So we lean on that. It became a really solid crutch that was the only thing we sold. We've got a better seed, better opportunity, and away we go. And now as that playing field starts to level and we don't necessarily have that advantage in any particular spot, we have to change a little bit how we sell. We have to change a little bit how we tell the story. And some have embraced that. And some have just stuck to the same old game plan. And what are the five words of a dying organization? We've always done it that way. That can bite you pretty hard.
It can. But, you know, to the standpoint of we've got the best seed, you know, one of the things that I'll say out there is there's always that opportunity. And I highly believe in, you know, the placing the proper seed in the proper place. And that sounds a little bit corny, but I mean, Mike Vandelot at Winfield several years ago taught me that son of a gun, and Mike was the CEO of Winfield and, you know, has since retired, and he and I still occasionally text. He taught me, I guess, more than 15 years ago that, look, proper hybrid placement is worth 10 plus bushels an acre. I've never forgotten. And I know that that's really important. And I think that that is a place where we can hang our hat and say, hey, we have got the best seed for your acre. And I think that that is within the realm of everybody that is selling, you know, corn, soybean, whatever seed they are, by knowing their customer and giving that really personal experience. Because our successful people, our trusted advisors, I say our, the independent professional seed companies, are the trusted advisors for the farmer. So that is a, you know, unique and envious position to be in from that perspective.
I was riding along with a sales guy down in the Midwest about a month ago, and he used a line on me that I thought was pretty solid. I said something about how he knew his customer. And he said, Sean, I don't necessarily just know the customer. I know the acre. I know the acre that they're talking about, that troublesome 10 acres they have in that field, like they know these pieces. And to come up with solutions based on knowing to that kind of level, that makes for a pretty powerful solution.
Without a doubt. It really does, without a doubt. Let me put you on the spot. Okay, so where do you think we're going? 5 years down the line, a lot of different things happening out there, a lot of different companies. You know, I've got to say, I noticed in your recent issue, you were talking about, you know, 15 innovative CEOs. I'm probably saying the wrong term, but 15 specific CEOs. My old friend Ponzi from Inari was listed in one of those positions. We haven't talked about Inari, but 5 years down the line, who's winning? Who do you think is winning? Who would you put your money? Where would you put your money on things to watch? Certainly, we know that Inari has been talking about a lot of different stuff. We had a chance, Catherine and I did, along with the rest of the board, IPSA board, to see some of the work that they're doing in the field. And I have to tell you, I was impressed. So who do you think 5 years from now, if we're looking in, it's, you know, 2029 coming into 2030, who's winning in the seed industry? What's your crystal ball tell you the seed industry looks like?
Yeah, these are dangerous questions, Todd.
They are. I'm putting you on the spot. Yeah, you're going to have people that are going to call you after this and say, you're an idiot, and I'm canceling my subscription to everything. Yeah. And you're going to have other people say, I've never had a subscription. I want one.
Well, and the good news is that typically my job is to stir the conversation. So here's what I'll tell you.
No. That's my job in this podcast. Stir the conversation. You got to answer the question.
So you're not going to get names out of me. I'm not going to drop
chicken.
Here's what I will tell you, Todd. There's going to be winners that aren't even on your radar right now. There's going to be winners that aren't even on my radar right now. So there's going to be new iterations. There is going to be joint ventures. There is going to be investments coming down the pipe that we don't even see coming, right? Okay, I will drop one name. Ohalo Genetics. Have you seen these guys? They just applied for patents the other day with their polyploiding technique.
Dude, you know, it's David Friedberg. Of course we've seen Ohalo Genetics. And just so you know, I'm connected to Earth Optics. That was a company I founded. And we just recently went through a merger, and David Friedberg is now our single biggest investor. So yeah, I know Ohalo Genetics.
Right. And so there's some interesting pieces there.
And besides, I listen to the All In podcast every single week. It's the number one podcast in the world, as they say.
As their claim suggests. I would suggest that a lot of our watchers today are not familiar with it. I would suggest that is the case. And I think that some of the ability that comes out of these organizations is not just to have a great idea. No longer is the great mousetrap the ultimate solution. You need to have the right partners, the right money, the right story, and the right face. Like, gone are the days where just come up with something really cool and it'll just go out into the world and be successful. So this idea of having those components built in place and a strategy and a plan to make that happen, that's what's going to be key to success. And I think when we're seeing these big companies perhaps taking a couple steps backwards, that is not to retreat forever. That is to a little bit retreat so that they can push forward on the next push. I think that our independent seed companies, the ones that are going to be successful, are doing the same thing, developing a plan. If they don't have a plan, you used the name Bex earlier. You cannot tell me that Bex does not have a 5, 10, 15-year strategy laid out. Right, like they have that strategy laid out in spades. And yet when I ask the majority of independent seed companies about their strategy, not their tactics, they've got lots of tactics, they've got lots of those pieces in place. But when I ask them about their strategy, it's not as strong as I think it could be. And having that strategy is scary because it forces them to do what you just pushed me into. Look into your crystal ball and anticipate what's going to happen. And we have to do some of that. And we have to be prepared to be wrong. And I'm prepared to be wrong. I don't know. And I'm Todd. I think I know you well enough. Kat, I know you well enough. You guys are willing to be wrong. But to make a decision and go in a direction is what we have to be prepared to do. And that takes bravery, like genuine, actual bravery, not flippant, I don't care if I'm successful or not, but it takes bravery to make that step to planning. And if we can be brave and make that step, then we have a shot at success.
No, and I agree. And while you're talking, I recall the fact, and you know, for several years now, every couple of years, and I've realized strategy is much longer than that, but with all the movements, it seems like something to refine. For several years, Catherine and I have been putting on, you know, a every 2 year kind of strategy review session with, you know, 20 or so of the independent seed companies. And we probably need to expand that because we're coming up on a year that we need to redo that in 25. It might not even be something to introduce at the annual meeting a little bit more. But the concept being the first part of the entire workshop is looking 5 years down the line. identifying winners and losers and thoughts and where we're going. And then, you know, there's a war game segment of looking through all of that. And it's interesting, but the concept behind it is absolutely to stir the thought so that people are looking more than this season and next season and thinking about what potentially am I facing in 5 years and how do I adjust to that? Because I do see that as a real strength in a few independent seed companies and a real weakness in many more, that they don't do that. And being part of a small business, you do hit a critical size at some point where it becomes easier to focus on the future. And I mean, you know, I look at, we talked about Bex, you know, you can't lose Wiffles in that. I've been super impressed with how Burris has kind of reimagined their go-to-market strategy, you know, with a little bit more of a house of brands approach and how they've grown up as well. So, you know, and there are others that are also good examples just to call out those three. But as you look at it, you know, if you hit a magnitude of size, it's easier to plan for the future. Otherwise, when you're at X size, you know, you really are so ingrained in day to day and what's happening the next year and things, it becomes more difficult to look into the future. But you are right. We've got to help. I think that's a key point for us to be able to help independent seed companies look down the line, give some expectations, some thought process to, hey, don't know what the crystal ball is, but here's some things to consider. Here's some things to look at. And let's face it, we know in you know, I know that we're getting shorter on time, so I want to start kind of getting to wrap up, but there were two other things that I really wanted to cover. We know that the competition space, IPS has been heavily involved in the competition space over the last 5 years, if not even before when we started seeing the large mergers all the way back to 2016, but particularly since 2019, 2020, we've been heavily focused in the competition space. We're at an inflection point. Next year, we see, in 2025, we see, you know, some trait products come off patent. In 2027, it's a landslide of products that are off patent in the corn realm. And, of course, we've got genetics, and it's interesting to see Ohalo. It's interesting to see where Inari is. We have a whole lot of companies that are also sitting out there, smaller companies that are, you know, doing entries into, you know, the conventional genetic space. But I guess the question is to you, and notably, we do see Corteva coming into the space right now with a competitive trait product in their PowerCore space. I guess the question that I really come into from your standpoint, how much of a play does all of this have in the future for corn, do you think? Because it does seem that, with the exception of Bayer's RNAi technology in the biotechnology trait, we've kind of run the gambit on insect traits. And, you know, there's a lot of things that are popping up with regards to herbicide traits in soybeans, but again, hitting some speed bumps. You know, we look at what's happened with the Xtend technology and dicamba and everything. So what does your crystal ball tell you about the world of traits and genetics going forward?
Yeah, I think I'm not naive enough to believe that I know every single technology that's under R&D plans right now. So I suspect there is a lot more going on than I will ever have my finger on the pulse of knowing. That said, I think that these off-patent developments are going to be gigantic. And I think a gigantic opportunity for independence. I really believe that it comes back to that point you made earlier, Todd. Do we need the absolute best possible 100% top tier option? Or do we need an option that fits better into making our producers successful? And what does successful mean? That means profitable and have sustainability. So if we're focused on that kind of an effort, then I think there is a large swath of people that fall into that side of the conversation. So the opportunity is to have our eyes open of what's available and not fall into that, well, we've always done it this way. We've always gone down this path. We've always leaned on this. So let's just keep leaning on that. What are those other options? What are those other opportunities? Because they are going to come, and they're going to come from different places, right? I think when I think of the conversations I had 20 years ago when I first started coming to your meeting, the word organic, I might as well have spat when I said it, right? It was like the worst possible word I could ever say at that meeting. And now I know for a fact that a lot of your folks are using that O word to their advantage and building part of their business towards that. Now, is it the biggest part? No. But the ones that are going to be successful going forward are going to be open to these other possibilities. And I think off-patent genetics is one of those.
And I think you are 100% correct on that. And with that, we'll let that be our last word. Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Brooke, man of great hair, wannabe Santa Claus, and the famous face of Seed World. And thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Sean.
My pleasure. Thanks very much, Kat. Thanks, Todd. Great to see you.